Gable versus Arps Ready Mix and Mr. Domina. Again, this is Gable. I maybe, is that right?
Goble.
Goble. And whatever I say is wrong on those things. All right. Goble versus Arps Ready Mix. Mr. Domina, you may proceed.
May it please the court. I'm Dave Domina. I'm here on behalf of Rick Goble to give you an opportunity to be right because we think the trial court was wrong. Our position here, Your Honors, is that the law of nuisance is designed to allow neighbors to work out their disputes peaceably between one another, even if one of those neighbors is operating lawfully, but in a way that is unreasonably intrusive to the complaining neighbor. That's the essence of the law of nuisance. It's not a defense to the law of nuisance that the actor accused of being a nuisance has a lawful operation. In this particular area of the law, maybe better than any other in the Nebraska-approved pattern jury instructions, the law is laid out in the comments to Instruction 1701. The elements of proof of nuisance are all about reasonableness, as conduct affects a person of ordinary sensitivities. Mr. Goble, the neighbor, is presumed to be a person of ordinary sensitivities. He lives across the street from a cement or concrete mixing plant. They use gypsum cement. His house is invaded with a dust that is clearly and unmistakably identifiable as gypsum cement dust.
Mr. Domina, isn't the question here, though, when your client moved into that house, he knew he was across the street from a cement plant, is that correct?
That is correct. However, the issue is whether it expanded.
And that's what I'd like to hear from is how did that change as opposed to just what it is?
Okay. Three answers to the court's question. Number one, the primary change is that directly across the street from him to the immediate north, when Mr. Goble moved in, the lot was owned by the city of Fremont. Its utilities plant used that lot strictly as a well-maintained and mowed lot where it kept excess poles, simply poles lying inert in piles, reasonably well-maintained. The cement plant was off to the east. The cement plant expanded. It also increased its capacity, but most importantly, it increased its operating hours, and that led to trucks and backup devices and noises in the middle of the night, and it increased the volume of dust during the day and the night. Mr. Goble then complained. So that's how we got here. There is another aspect, I think, to that part of the court's question, which is that because there's a dispute about that expansion, that's an issue of fact. That's one of the issues that has to go to the jury under the instruction as an element of nuisance. And the court below didn't see that as an issue of law and didn't decide the issue on that basis. We lost in the court below because the trial court believed we needed an expert witness to prove two things. Number one, a standard of care for the cement plant, and number two, proximate causation. But we're not talking about neurosurgery here. We're talking about dust and noise and traffic and, on a limited basis, odor, which is an unusual aspect, coming from this plant. That's all. Dust, noise, traffic, a little bit of odor.
So specifically, the court granted summary judgment on the issue of causation because he believed that you needed to proffer an expert in that regard, and you did not, and therefore he granted it across the board.
That's correct.
Causation, correct? Would you agree, at least as to the issue of whether the plant is producing toxic dust that caused physical injury, you needed an expert, at least in that regard?
I think we definitely needed an expert to get to the jury at trial on the question of medical causation, yes. But we never were permitted to get to that point because it wasn't across-the-board summary judgment. I do agree with you that we would need a medical connection to prove a medical injury.
Did you not need it at the summary judgment hearing in light of the challenge to proximate cause as to the injuries?
If there had been a motion for summary judgment before the court parsing the elements of damages, so the result could have been partial summary judgment, the answer definitely would have been yes. Absent that kind of a motion, I think the answer's no.
Yeah, and so, so to bifurcate this, you have this issue of toxic dust and medical causation.
Yes.
But you also pled a more general theory of nuisance, right?
Yes, and...
Dust, odor, smell, traffic, and you're saying as to that, we don't need an expert in that.
That's correct. We pled what we perceived from day one as a Johnson versus County of Knox partnership case, in which the elements that we had to prove were all within the ambit of the understanding of an average juror, unless we decided to connect up to a medical cause. And our client did have complaints about irritations, dermatological irritations, principally coughs. We needed a doctor on that. There's no question we needed a doctor on that. There is some medical evidence in the record, whether it's sufficient or not, I think that's a legitimate, separate, and distinct question. But we're entitled to go to trial on the general negligence claim. That's our position. I need not take the rest of your time.
Well, before you go, I have one other question for you. You had a separate assignment of error as it relates to the burden of proof and that reasonable certainty requirement. As I looked at that order, don't you think that the judge was talking about the issue of an expert opinion and that which renders it admissible as opposed to the burden of proof?
Your Honor, I think if the court agrees with us on general causation and our right to a trial on the general theory of nuisance, that whatever language strayed into that single sentence in the court's order on what our burden was with an expert disappears, and the court need not deal with that assignment of error.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry.
And Ms. Kamler, is that
Ms.
correct?
Ms. Kamler.
All right. You may proceed.
May it please the court. I'm Christina Kamler. I represent ARPS Ready Mix Company in the suit that was filed against it by Mr. Rick Goble. I want to start off by addressing what Mr. Domina alleged as factual information in the record pertaining to the changes in the plant. If you go to the record at T130, Mr. Goble testified as to all the things that were occurring in 2008 as of the date he moved into his home. Those things included washing out the trucks in the pit located across the street in the wash lot, pouring leftover concrete, dumping fine grain materials, doing all of the things that he claims is a nuisance as of today. They were doing those in 2008 by Mr. Goble's admission, and it's in the record at T130. So please reference that.
Did other neighbors testify differently?
Other neighbors testified consistently that these activities have been going on for a long time. And for the court's reference, the record actually establishes, by way of my statement of facts and citations to specific parts of the record, which is required under the current procedural rules for summary judgment, that Mr. Domina did not follow, and that's briefed heavily in my brief, that these things have been going on extensively since 1999. My client, they actually set up shop in 1964. In 1999, my client petitioned the city council for the ability to operate at its current capacity. By 1999, they had all the property that is the subject of this litigation and have been doing all the activities they've been doing that as alleged in this litigation.
But this is summary judgment. Would you acknowledge there's at least enough in this record to create a factual issue as to whether or not there was something more after 2008
I would
than there
not,
was prior to?
I would not acknowledge that, Your Honor. If you look at specifically at the statement of facts filed by Mr. Domina, I responded to every one of those facts and showed how it doesn't create a genuine issue of fact. I did that in my brief, specifically at pages 20 and beyond.
The court, in its order, found that summary judgment was appropriate here on the issue of causation,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that's the limited issue that's before us, is it not? Can we
yes.
even get to this issue that you're talking about right now?
I don't even think we do, because I think the law of the case is clear that proximate cause is an issue of a nuisance case. You don't get to come into court and just allege by way of your own observations that there is particular matter traveling from one property to another, because as a lay witness, Mr. Goble doesn't have the ability to testify about that. He's talking about particulate matter that is smaller than the size of a human hair. traveling from one property, from my client's property, to his. How can he possibly say he knows that that is cement material, particularly when there is a grain plant right behind my client's property that produces 17 tons of particulate matter a year? Comparably, my client, in its NDEQ records, produces 2.5 tons of particulate matter a year. So for them to say that they can come to court with their own observation and distinguish dust created or seen on ARPS's property from that which is emitted by ADM, the neighboring grain facility, it's impossible.
My recollection is there had not been any air quality testing or...
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That's correct. And Mr. Zimba testified that there is air quality testing that can be done to make that connection between ARPS's activities spewing matter onto the plaintiff's properties. He just didn't do that type of testing. So we're not asking for an untenable or unattainable type of proof. We're asking that they come to court with the expert testimony necessary to link my client's activities to the plaintiff's residence and his complaint.
Isn't there evidence in the record, though, of them watching dust, watching the dust particles move from your plant onto their property? Doesn't that create a factual issue as it relates to that?
I don't think it does, given the ADM dust, because the plaintiff's own expert testified that the dust from ADM very much probably lands on my client's property and then travels to the plaintiff's. So you can't say that the dust that they observe is generated by ARPS's activities. It's probably more likely than not ADM's dust moving over to the plaintiff's facility. So the proximate cause issue on the dust is a very significant one, and I think you have to have more than just IC dust, because it's particulate matter and you don't know the contents of it. With regards to the noise and the traffic and those types of things, the record does not establish that activity has increased. In fact, my statement of fact sets forth and confirms that from 1999 onward, we've been doing the exact same activities and nothing has substantially changed. In fact, in 2005, ARPS produced the most concrete it's ever produced. That was 2005, before Mr. Goebel moved into the area. So for anybody to say that things have substantially increased when they've had a lower output is bizarre and not supported by the record.
It's my recollection that the evidence was that your client had not been cited by any governmental body as to being in violation of any rules or regulations or laws.
That is true. That is correct.
I want to just take you real quick to the trial court's order on page 4, and I think Judge Welch and Mr. Domino were discussing it earlier, but would you agree when the court said the plaintiff is charged with the burden of producing evidence to show a reasonable degree of certainty,
yes,
as opposed to probability, that the court was wrong when it said it was a reasonable degree of certainty?
I think the standard is probability, and I don't think they've met that standard. The probability standard is set forth in the cases of King and McNeil. They all discuss the general and specific causation requirements in a toxic tort case. The general requirement being that you have to come up with some evidence that the plaintiff or the defendant's activities created a certain type of material as well as quantities of material that could be harmful to a person. And then also that the plaintiff, under specific causation, has been too exposed to the quantity of material that can be harmful. They just don't get there with the plaintiff's expert in this case, and it's by his own admission that he can't really link.
And Zimba was their only expert.
Right, and all he does is discuss things in terms of possibilities, that it's possible that cement could be emitted from this facility because cement is emitted from every single concrete facility in America.
So you're saying even under a standard of reasonable probability, they wouldn't have met that either?
They did not meet that, no, Your Honor. I also have pled a counter claim in this case and appealed the court's decision to not address that counterclaim. I claim that my client's entitled to a prescriptive easement due to the duration of its activities. They've been doing these activities since 1999, and they've not substantially changed those activities. I've established through my statement of facts how those activities have been going on since 1999 and not substantially changed.
Is there any case law that you're aware of that would allow us to address that issue even if we chose to, since the district court didn't address it, how is it that we can address it? Because we wouldn't be reviewing the district court's decision. We'd be making our own decision.
You would be reviewing the decision and perhaps instructing the district court on how to go forward on that issue. There is appellate case law that allows courts to evaluate those issues if they would have an effect on the proceedings below and provide some instruction. I can't give you a case off the top of my head, but I know it does exist. In terms of, I do want to address one other procedural thing, and that is that in 2017, the legislature passed a new summary judgment standard. I'm sure you guys are aware of that. It's significant because in this case, I filed a statement of facts, and Mr. Domina never responded to that statement of fact with citations to the record so as to generate a genuine issue of material fact. It's significant. The legislature did that for a reason. I know I'm on the procedural committee for the Nebraska Bar Association. We pushed the legislature for that legislation so that courts don't have to sift through 2,000-page records to come up with a statement of facts or a genuine issue of fact. So they don't have to vet Mr. Domina's argument that this dispute exists. And so with that, I'd ask the court to look very seriously at the statement of facts that I filed with the court. It's in the supplemental transcript. It is at page, I believe, it's in the supplemental transcript. I know that because I had to go and get the supplemental transcript to make sure that was filed so that it could be acknowledged. But the argument basically is that under 1332, when a statement of fact is filed, the plaintiff or the opposing party has to respond. And if they don't, the court can deem those facts admitted. And that's what the court did. If you look at the court's decision and the facts it finds, it mimicked those facts that I relayed to the court in my motion in the statement of facts. So I'd ask that the court consider that and enforce the rule that's been passed by the legislature.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your time is up. We have time for rebuttal. All right, Mr. Domina.
May it please the court, there is one assigned error in the cross appeal. It has nothing to do with the procedure for summary judgment. It has only to do with prescriptive easements. The trial court did not decide the prescriptive easement issue. A trial court can only commit reversible error by either deciding something or failing to decide something that was essential to its decision. Here, the trial court dismissed my case. It didn't have to decide the counterclaim, so there is no issue before you on the cross appeal. As for the rest of what you just heard, jury argument, and we're entitled to hear it again before a jury. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fowler. The case will be taken under submission, and the parties are excused.